views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hey, everybody, this is Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture, change, and leadership, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I'm really excited about our guest, who is David Sturt, the Executive Vice President of OC Tanner. And David and I are going to be talking about the future of culture. You know, as we head into 2019, what are some of the trends? What are some of the cultural impacts and success factors? And David's going to be sharing some really fascinating research his company has been doing. So OC Tanner is a company that focuses on global recognition and culture. David is a New York Times bestselling author of great work, How to Make a Difference People Love, and the newly released companion book, Appreciate. His work and interviews have been published in the Wall Street Journal, Harvard Business Review, Fast Company, and Inc., and he co-authors a weekly leadership column for Forbes.com. David has spoken at TEDx and to thousands of business leaders at conferences around the world and companies, including Bank of America, Dow Chemical, Nationwide, Home Depot, and MGM. David has a bachelor's degree in training and development and an MBA and 2 decades of experience in research, innovation, and leadership. He was born in England, raised in South Africa, and educated in the U.S. and Asia, and he is driven by making a difference in the world. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Claudette. Great to be with you.
Yeah, it's great. Great to have you here. Been looking forward to the show. For listeners, I actually met David at a conference at the end of last summer and got to hear him speak. So that made David made me extra excited to have you as a guest because I know we're gonna have a great conversation.
Well, thanks. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So I know you've worked at OC Tanner for a while, but tell us a little bit about OC Tanner and also how you got involved in the culture space professionally.
Sure. Just a little background on OC Tanner. The company's been around for over 90 years and has been the world's leader in employee recognition. And so as part of that, we help organizations all over the world recognize their people when they do great work. And so as part of that effort, we've done a ton of research around workplace culture, around what works and what doesn't, what's effective and why. And during the course of that research, we began to see the disproportionately powerful effect that recognition and basic appreciation has on building thriving workplace cultures. And so that led us into a deeper dive into workplace culture. What are some of the other contributors to really thriving cultures? And when certain elements are missing, what effect does that have? And so that's at the OC Tanner Company, we have the OC Tanner Institute, where we have a great research team that that just does a ton of research. And we've, over the last 2 years, done some really extensive global research around workplace culture, looking through the lens of the employee's experience. And we found that fascinating. And so that's part of what we've been sharing.
That's really interesting. Thanks for sharing that. And I did not know that that OC Tanner has been around for 90 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a rare thing these days.
It is. And a lot of companies that focus on culture are newer, right? Comparatively speaking.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. And so how did you get in the culture space yourself? What drew you to it? What was your background?
You know, I've always been fascinated by it. When I got my bachelor's degree, years ago. It was in HR training and development, and we spent quite a bit of time diving into culture and seeing what effects culture had on performance and on outcomes. And I remember back then doing a number of culture audits where we'd go into organizations and try to understand not just what was their stated culture through the eyes of the leadership, but in fact, what was the actual experience of employees, what was actually valued through the stories that they would share, and the heart and soul of the organization. And I just, that just blew my mind. It was just so fascinating to hear the discrepancy between sometimes what a leader or CEO would think was their culture, and then what was the reality. And then within that reality, that's really where people lived every day. You know, we do our tasks, we have responsibility and assignments and roles within an organization, but that invisible hand, that social operating system, if you will, called culture, that seemed to just have such a powerful effect, not only on what people did, but how they thought and how they saw the world and whether their work was meaningful or not to them. And it just seemed like it was this powerful influence that not a lot of people were really talking about or even seeing. Mm-hmm. So from way back when, it became really fascinating to me. And then having grown up in different parts of the world and being immersed in different ethnic cultures and national cultures, that became fascinating to me as well. And so a deeper dive in the research we've been doing lately, I just can't get enough of it. It's just fascinating to just see. And I go into companies literally all over the world, and within a matter of a few minutes, you can quickly sense different dimensions of a culture and how that informs so much of that organization's way of being. So I could go on about why I'm fascinated about it, as you can see, but I think it's something that its time is really arriving as more yes. senior level leaders are starting to understand the effect of that, and mm-hmm. that it's not just processes and metrics. There's something bigger that's driving all of those things.
Yeah, I hear the passion in your voice, and you and I, you know, offline had talked about how we're lucky we are to both be in this space, right? Because it's so exciting and exhilarating. Exactly. Yeah. You said a couple of things I want to highlight because they were so important. This discrepancy, right, between what a leader might think is happening and the reality of what's happening, which is this place people live every day. And that is such a great way to describe, you know, like you said, culture as this social operating system. And that folks, once people, I find, start to understand how that works within their own organization, it's like it opens a door for them, this window into something they knew was happening, but they couldn't quite put their finger on it.
Yeah, that's well said. It kind of knew, we're all aware that there's sort of this personality thing about an organization, but the deeper you get into it, the more you become aware of its powerful influence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it made me think about my mid to late 20s. I had two jobs back to back early in my career, and the first one was in a really great culture by many, you know, many different measures you would have called this a great culture. And I thrived there. I had this amazing manager. He said, saw this potential. He said, you know, gave me all this autonomy, go create this, go do that, right? And then I moved across the country. So went to a different job, completely different culture, very toxic culture. And I look back on that and saw how my performance changed, right? Mm-hmm. Just my confidence changed about what my abilities were. And so when we have those experiences, and you had, you know, yours growing up in different ethnic cultures around the world, it's really interesting how it starts to give you this window into how culture so impacts us in ways we do not even necessarily always know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think so often people think, we all like to believe that we're oh so independent, that we are just so, you know, unaffected by our surroundings. And man, the more I've studied this, the more I've become aware, wow, it has a way bigger influence than most people think.
Yeah, it really, really does. It really does. And so what, you know, given that it has so much influence, and you said, you know, it's like the culture's time has come, like so many people are much more open to understanding it, looking at it. What are some of the trends that you're seeing right now?
You know, one of the things that I found very interesting as, you know, people have talked, and particularly HR leaders have talked about culture for a long, long time.
Right. And
I think part of the shift that's beginning to happen is when you look at how many articles and how many comments are now starting to show up, not just in HR circles, but in senior leadership circles, in HBR, in leadership media, it's starting to become talked about and even insisted upon, and it's making news in interesting ways. And I think people are starting to go, yeah, that organization culture, I can see how that culture has had an influence on outcomes. And often in the news, it's lousy outcomes, or it's outcomes that have created legal issues for organizations and created all kinds of pressure that caused people to say, huh, we need to not just treat this as a almost a random occurrence, but it's systematic of something bigger in the core. And most recently, just a year ago, it was fascinating to see the National Association for Corporate Directors, the largest director association. If you're on a board, particularly a public board, chances are good you belong to that association so that you can be well-informed as to your fiduciary responsibilities as a board member. And when they came out a year ago and said, corporate culture can no longer be considered as a soft issue by management and boards, and that its effect has a massive influence on organizational performance and reputation, I think that's the first major salvo, I think, across the bow of every major organization to begin to take it seriously and begin to hold organization leaders accountable for the culture they create and the culture that they intentionally shape. And they're going to want to start getting, I think, reports and input about the strategy for culture development. And I think that's new. That wasn't talked about 10 years ago, 20 years ago, et cetera. So I really think its time has come. And I think we're going to see much more visibility of this topic in board meetings and in senior executive team meetings over the coming years.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that report, right, the recommendation from the Corporate Directors Association is a huge step, as you said, in the right direction. And what would it be like for leaders to actually know they're being held accountable, right, for the culture? And some of them inherently feel like they're responsible, right, because they're the leaders, they're the head of the organization. But this really changes that entire level of accountability. And you mentioned something about culture being, you know, systematic, and which I completely agree with. And what's so great when we start viewing organizations view culture as systematic, it stops them, hopefully, also from saying, oh, that was just so and so's fault, right? And
yeah,
then we have to get our hands of it and move on. So it changes that entire dynamic.
I think it does. And I think that level of accountability is actually pretty helpful, because from all of our research, pretty much everyone wants to work in a healthy, thriving, dynamic culture. You know, as you described the experience you had going from a really great culture to a toxic one, and how that starts shutting you down in a toxic one, every organization wants, and every individual wants, I think, the vitality and the vibrance, the energy, and the positive goodness that is attracted to great workplace cultures. So I do think as CEOs and others get more intentional about it and less thinking that it's just sort of a default thing, or that culture is this static condition that just maintains itself over time, but actually thinking about curating that and editing out the elements of culture that are not so flattering for the organization and that are even getting in the way of its future performance, and then amping up and being intentional about lifting and promoting and building some of those dimensions of culture that the organization will need to have to grow into who it's growing into and becoming who it wants to become. And thus being more intentional, I think people then feel more empowered, not just leaders, but when all employees are invited to help contribute to shaping that, you really start to see some pretty incredible things happening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree. And on that uplifting note, we're going to take a really quick break. You're listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley, and stay tuned. We will be right back.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher, Sarah Luce, brings her unique style to the hit show, Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit SarahLuce.com. That's SarahLuce.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Do you believe you are meant to live with more joy, but you're just not sure how to get it? What does the phrase, "give me the joy," make you feel? Join me, Lynn Horde, every second and fourth Thursday, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, on the Give Me the Joy Show, as I take you on a journey to peel back the layers so you can take back your joy. To find out more about my work as the Joy Coach, including my popular programs, Joy School and Joy at Work, visit lynnhorde.com.
Take your own journey with the angels with Claire Candy Hoff's heaven-sent guided angel meditation CD. Letting go of concerns and living in the now. This beautiful CD walks listeners through practical exercises to help free them from the burdens, worries, and concerns of daily life.
Walking a quarter of the way across the bridge, you see a bright emerald green light and sense a loving presence. This is Archangel Raphael's green healing energies, nourishing and revitalizing you. Take a moment now to bathe in this green healing light.
Giving you much more than just relaxation and stress release, this wonderfully narrated CD provides vivid visualization, soothing and inspiring music, and an angel's choir that will bring you peace, clarity, and a newfound awareness. Visit angelhealinghouse.com today.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley, and my guest today is David Sturt, who is an Executive Vice President at O.C. Tanner and goes all around the world working with companies to help them really create great cultures. So, David, we've been having a really fascinating conversation, and just before we went to break, talking about the importance of leaders taking full accountability and how the directive of corporate boards really is sort of leading that cause, right? And shifting how leaders view culture.
Correct.
Yeah. And I know one of the things that one of the many things that you've been doing with OC Tanner through your research is coming up, you came up with six, I believe they're called fundamental aspects of culture, right?
Yeah.
And I know you could talk about this for hours, literally, right? There's so much here, but give us the short version, I think, because I think the aspects are really great. And they also, I know, come from this huge body of research, don't they?
Correct. Yeah. As I mentioned, we have really tried to get to the heart of what is it that employees really value, and what elements are always present when somebody says, I work at a great place, I work at a great company, there's a great culture where I work. And so we embarked on first of all, just a number of focus groups with employees all over the world, trying to pursue that question. And again, this is unique in that it's looking through the lens of the employee, not from the lens of the CEO, sort of looking down on the organization and saying, this is what it is, but more through the lens of the employee. What is it that is meaningful to them, that's valued to them, and that these elements are present when people report that they work for a great organization? And we surveyed after the focus groups, we surveyed, now it's been over 27,000 people worldwide.
Wow.
And really pursuing the answers to those questions. And there were six ingredients, if you will, that really became quite clear that these dimensions, these aspects of workplace culture were really important. And so maybe I'll just buzz through them. The first is what we've collected into a category called purpose. And that is not so much just, do they have a mission statement? Do they have a vision? Or even, is there a purpose articulated? But it's, do people connect with the sense of what the organization is about? And that can happen at all the way up at the organizational level. It can also happen at the team level. But it's important that people feel connected to a bigger cause, that their work adds up to some bigger endeavor that's a valuable thing to be about doing. And so that sense of purpose is a powerful attractor, a powerful magnet. We often refer to these six things as talent magnets.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to draw people's and elicit people's engagement and their desire to bring their discretionary effort to the table when that's in place. So purpose is meaningful. The second one is around opportunity. This is, do people see an opportunity for them to grow and develop? Not always necessarily to move up the career ladder, but to develop their skills, to learn more, to expand the value that they can end up creating. And are they connected to that, or is that distant from them? And people make important decisions, whether they stay, whether they join an organization, and whether they engage based on the sense of opportunity that they experience as an employee within that setting.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is around success. And that's really, do they feel like they make a difference? Can they actually feel and taste what success is feeling like within their role, within their team, within their organization? And that's really important. If people don't feel successful, if they don't feel like they are making a difference, if they don't feel like they're having some wins, however small or large they may be, it creates this uneasy void, and it begins to cultivate a deep sense of insecurity and lack of feeling valuable in the work that you're contributing. So that's an important dynamic.
And that's one thing I just want to jump in for a minute about the success and highlight it, because I think this is very overlooked in a lot of the dialogue on culture that I'm hearing or books I'm seeing and reading. And it's, when you say it, it's so obvious, right? Are they making a difference? Do they feel successful, right? Or do I feel like I'm going in every day in a mediocre way, right? because of different things happening, maybe that are outside of my control. So this is really, I think, a key, I mean, purpose and opportunity are huge, but I think success gets overlooked. What's your take on that?
I totally agree, Claudette. It does. And I think people underestimate what happens when, as you described, when people don't feel successful, and underestimate the value when people do feel successful. It's that feeling of being on a winning team. It's that feeling that there's progress too. Innovation is in that same collection. Almost that restlessness to constantly be improving and to feel the effects of that improvement. And that feeling the effects of that, I think, is what fuels the lifeblood of people's willingness and desire to do the next great work and the next accomplishment that is right around the corner for them. And so especially, you notice it, especially when it's missing in a culture. It's almost like no matter what they do around the other edges of that, if that one's not being treated and attended to, you get all kinds of crazy. And some of the just don't have an effect.
Yeah. So, thanks for sharing a little bit more about that, because I think that just gets overlooked. Yeah. So what's the next talent, Meg?
The next one, the fourth one, is around appreciation. Mm-hmm. And this is the flip side of the success coin, the flip side of that success coin. And that is, do I feel valued when I contribute? Do I feel like if I'm going to do what you as a company leader hope I do, which is fully invest and actually bring that extra effort to my work, and I do things that create value and move the organization forward, is it in fact noticed? Does anybody really care? Is it something that I can sort of tangibly feel that it's worth it? Because clearly, if the purpose is there, the opportunity is there, I'm feeling successful in having accomplished this thing, if there's no sign that that was valued and appreciated, it just has this terrible undermining effect, which basically creates this huge cognitive dissonance between, oh, you're saying that this is valued, but in fact, it really isn't. And I think it's a really, really important part, and we've done a ton of research in this category, and boy, when that's present, it seems to hold all the other elements together and amplify them. And when it's missing, again, despite some of your best efforts in some of these other areas, people don't believe it's authentic, and they don't feel that there's this deep sense of humanity in the organization. And so it's a potent one. The next one is around well-being. And this is something we've seen rise in prominence over the last number of years, where the sort of the social contract, if you will, of employees joining an organization to go to work with them used to think, hey, you know, the deal's the deal, and the company sort of behaves the way it does, and I don't have a big voice in the whole reciprocal relationship. And I think that's fundamentally changed now. I think individuals are feeling like it's not okay for me to sort of sell my soul to the corporation and be mistreated. I expect that the organization will treat me as a whole human being, that will consider me as a more holistic person than just what I bring to work every day, and that they ought to be attentive to my health, to my emotional, social, financial well-being. And so I think that's an important one. And I see organizations that haven't yet figured that out, where they're still sort of thinking they can kind of just set the stage for what they expect employees to do and expect that they'll just be quiet and do that, even if it means at the detriment of their personal health and well-being. And I think particularly with the sort of not only social media, with the glass doors, with the voice that more individuals have, that's becoming an expectation and one that needs to be attended to. And then finally, the last but certainly not least, probably one of the most important, is leadership. And that is not just your direct leader, but also all the way up the chain. But that's when you think of sort of the boxes on the org chart, that version of leadership. But then mm-hmm. there's another more, I think, even more pervasive and broader sense of what that leadership talent magnet entails. And that is the influence that people have. And I think mm-hmm. more and more individuals are coming to discover how much more influence they have in a team as a contributor and not even necessarily as a designated line leader. But how does that leadership give and take, coach and mentor, listen and facilitate the work that's going on? So those are the six core ingredients that employees routinely speak to as what they hope for and what they report is there when they work for thriving, great workplace cultures.
Well, David, thanks for sharing that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm excited to dive back into a few of these, right? Because I think there's so much here. So you're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. And when we come back, we'll learn a little bit more about these six talent magnets. Stay tuned.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at LouParadise.com.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Miss any shows during the week? Don't worry, we've got you covered. Yahoo! With the free Transformation Talk Radio app, you'll have access to all of the past week's shows in the palm of your hand. Yes! Tune in to Transformation Talk Radio anywhere you go with our free app for any of your devices. Check out our app in the App Store and Google Play Store today.
Hi, this is Laura Richer, host of On the Verge Radio. Sometimes you hear encouraging messages like transform your life now, become empowered, create the life you crave, and it all seems overwhelming and you're not sure where to start. I'm here to tell you that self-improvement is not always fun and easy, but it is always worth it. The path to creating positive changes begins with releasing the things that have been holding you back. Then you can create a life that inspires you. I know this because I've done it. You can find out more about what I do by visiting my website, seattlehealinghypnosis.com. I look forward to supporting you on your journey.
Are you ready to embrace your essence and the magic of who you are? Let me, Emily Perkins, hold your hand and walk with you as we go treasure hunting for the gold that lies within you. Tune in to Love Living Radio every second and fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit LoveLivingHolistics.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley here with my guest today, David Sturt from OC Tanner. David, before we dive back into our conversation, how can folks learn more about you, OC Tanner, and your work?
I think the easiest would be go to octanner.com, and we have tons of our research. We make that available on our website. So there's a lot of white papers. There's our 2018 culture report that really shares a lot of the details that goes much deeper than obviously we can go in this amount of time.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. And I know I have one of your white papers that talks about these different talent magnets. And I think it's a great, you know, for anybody who's listening, who's thinking, oh, wow, this is really, you know, intriguing to me. And I can see this might really work in my organization. It sounds like they can certainly contact you, but they can also start with that paper, right?
Exactly.
And it's more detail. Yeah. Excellent. So I know you shared the six different talent magnets, which were so interesting. And I know one of the ones we wanted to spend a little more time on was the first one, purpose, right?
Yeah.
Deeper dive. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned, it's important to keep in mind a couple of things when you think about crafting or restating your purpose. To me, the process, as we've worked with lots of organizations, helping them find that. Sometimes they've just lived with a mission statement or something that's been, let's just say, lacking in emotional connection.
There you go.
How's that for being kind? Some of them are a little painful, which means employees don't emotionally connect with them. And so as we've gone to help organizations really come to better understand their purpose, for me, it's less about coming up with something new, and it's more about going on an archaeological dig, go down into the organization and see what are the most powerful elements around answering the question why. Why is the organization doing what it's doing? What effect is it having on its customers, on its constituents? And it reminds me, and I'll share one example with you that I thought was just exemplary and outstanding. I was talking to the Bruce Pfau, who's the head of HR and vice chair at KPMG. And this was an interesting exercise that he was faced with. He was looking at their engagement data, which you know, a lot of their data was high. They're a great organization. They have a fabulous reputation. And just about any a graduate of a finance or accounting degree generally would love to work at KPMG. So they have a great name and brand essence. But what they noticed was they were missing a real strong connection, a real emotional connection between their employees and this purpose of what KPMG is all about. Because it would be easy to just think, oh, you know, they're about audits and they're about spreadsheets and they're about, you know, financial analysis, and their people work hard and do great work around that. But sort of why? What's at the heart of that? And so he identified in the data that they were tracking that there was a real missing element, a missing ingredient, that people weren't feeling this emotional connection to what KPMG was really all about. And so he decided, let's go after this. Let's see if we can really answer this. And so he started in a place that I thought was interesting. When I mentioned earlier this archaeological dig, that's exactly what he did. And he went back through the archives of the company looking for meaningful things that KPMG had been involved in, where they had really made a difference at a small or large scale. And he pretty soon started to discover things across the sort of rich heritage of KPMG's history and started pulling them forward and then setting those up as the story of what happened. And then they turned those in to some campaigns that they then shared more broadly across the enterprise. One of them that I loved that was meaningful to me, having grown up as a little boy in Cape Town, South Africa, was one that KPMG was involved with in South Africa. And that was when the government changed from a non-democracy to a full democracy. So for the first time, every individual in the country could actually vote. And one of the biggest concerns that everybody had in this massive transition of power was, can the vote be trusted? Can I count on the fact that when the government reports on who the winner is, that is in fact accurate and true? Well, who did they invite in to help audit that but KPMG? So they shared that as an example, and the example they gave, which I thought was terrific, was a campaign that said, "We champion democracy." And they basically said, "Look, we're here for a purpose." And then they shared a number of other stories. That one I just love, because people could then emotionally connect with this bigger purpose and see how, even though there's counting and there's auditing, it ladders up to contributing in a really powerful way. And then he went one step further, and I thought this was outstanding. Not only did he share some of these examples and share them around the world, but he also then invited all employees to contribute and share their own ways in which they had made a difference on a project. And I loved it. He hoped to get 10,000 submissions, and he did some things to make it worthwhile for them to submit. And he ended up having 43,000 submissions.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
They then turned those into these other little campaigns of how they made a difference, like I Combat Terrorism. And I'll read from one that's sitting in front of me. KPMG helps scores of financial institutions prevent money laundering, keeping financial resources out of the hands of terrorists and criminals. And then he said, you know, KPMG, you're here for a purpose. I just thought it was outstanding. And each one of those not only helped everyone share in this common purpose, but helped people better see a line of sight from the work they do every day all the way up to the purpose of the organization.
It's an amazing story. I mean, I got chills again listening to it. You know, to think that KPMG in all these different ways, and especially related to the protect, you know, helping the to protect the election in South Africa. I mean, what a profound contribution, right?
Exactly.
It's a lot, right? Which is not all that exciting, but it was the power of like, we do need people to audit. We do need people to monitor, and they did it, and they did something historical.
Exactly. And I think you'd be surprised how few companies spend the time to help people see that path to the bigger contribution that they're making. And they kind of get lost in the details of their task. And I think we can all do a better job at this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it would probably be really amazing if every company that hasn't done purpose work did it, right? Because you start connecting people to something much bigger than they are. I know I was just sharing an example with you on our break, right? And when people start to see like, hey, I'm doing something every day that really impacts and matters and contributes. My belief is that almost all people do want to contribute in some way. And that purpose gives them that.
They do. They do. Yeah. And you help fuel that level of engagement when they feel like the why is being answered.
Yes. Yeah. Why are we even here, right? Doing this every day.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. I know something else you mentioned that was is always real, and I agree. It's so fundamental, and it's so interesting to dive into a little bit more. Is appreciation, right? Which it seems to be like you said it. No, you didn't use the word glue, but I was listening to the six talent magnets. It sounds like that's one of the glues that holds those all together.
It is. It is, and I think part of it is because it's the deepest sense of humanity, I think, in the core of the culture, is a genuine caring. It's an authentic, I value you and I value your contributions. I see you. I understand the sacrifices that you make. I understand that you have a choice to work here. You could be anywhere, but you choose to come here and you choose to contribute in ways that really help move us forward. And I think that orientation, that foundation, when it's there, it really opens up the opportunity for relationships, for all kinds of things that sort of stem from that foundation.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when I think about some organizations, I'm just curious to get your take on this. So there are organizations I'll go into and we'll talk about the idea of appreciation or something like that, right? And they'll say, why would like, okay, yeah, it's good to appreciate people every annual holiday party, right? We do this and we do a summer event and all that. And I tell people good things with their performance reviews, but why would I appreciate them for doing what they're supposed to be doing? Right. Which, you know, of course I don't agree with, and I know you don't, but what would you say? I'm curious, what do you, when you hear that from a leader or some version of it, what do you, how do you, what do you say?
Yeah, I think they don't understand what effect it has, because often they may not even understand what effect that has when they think, oh, you know, we had an employee appreciation day. We said, hey, you know, we sure love every little thing you do, whatever the heck you do, we just love you. And they sort of sprinkle this appreciation pixie dust around and they think, oh, that'll do. Go back and check the box. Hey, I've expressed appreciation. Don't have to do that for another 6 months. They ought to all feel really appreciated, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the silliness of the perspective, because the reality is, if you don't care whether they engage or not, then maybe that doesn't matter to you either. But the reality is, if people choose to dig deep and invest enough to innovate, to make a difference, to take care of that customer, to do the very thing, to put their heart into their work, the biggest thing they want to know is, if I do that, is it in fact valued? Does it matter? And to me, that's the role of the leader, is to help that individual understand how valued a thing it was that they just did, and to create that connection. It's not just about trying to make people feel good or validate people for having done the work. It's rocket fuel for people, because when they can see the effect they're having and the impact and what it's doing, wow, it fuels them forward. It's so much more powerful than most people understand. And if you've had that happen to you, you can get it. And I think for some of those leaders, they haven't had that experience, and so they don't understand it, and therefore they don't lead that way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what you're saying is, it's a lack of understanding, right? It's a lack of knowing what the impact is of appreciation that's woven into the fabric of your organization in a day in, day out kind of a way, right?
That's right. And, you know, some of our research is interesting in that regard, in that, you know, we found that worldwide, only 57% of employees received a thank you from a leader or a peer in the last 30 days. So, you know, it's barely over half. Somebody is saying something to express appreciation for what they did. Another statistic we saw in the data that was a bit unnerving was this, and that is 42% of employees were told how they could also improve when they were receiving their recognition. So basically it's saying, hey, Claudette, you just did a fabulous job. You know what? You could have done this a little better, and you could have done that, and I didn't think you handled this very well. That's not recognition when it's paired with things to improve, because that's basically a little feedback session. That is different than recognition. And so understanding the importance of what happens to you when somebody sees the value that you've created. And to me, it's not just about the expression of appreciation, quite frankly. It's also about marking, designating, calling out what great work looks like, what success looks like. And that's why I say it's on the flip side of the same coin as success. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised how many employees don't know what success actually looks like for their role. And when you see it and you hear it, and somebody takes the time to sort of mark it, stamp it, and go, this is great work, this is awesome, it not only sends a message to that employee, oh, that is success, and dang, that feels pretty dang good, but it also sends a really powerful message to all of those on the team, especially when that recognition is given publicly, that they look around and go, huh, that matters around here. And now that's personified the very thing that I think they're talking about. Now I get it in a more tangible, real way. And I now have a handle on it, so that I can go do something like that. And then it begins to create this sort of, have this propagation effect that spreads across the team and then ultimately around organizations. So it's not just to say thank you. There's a lot more going on when you do it right.
Yeah, and especially what you said about what does great work look like for my role, right?
Right.
I actually know, and it reminded me of a recent situation. I was involved with an organization, and we really had to talk a lot about how if you just give constructive feedback, and that's all, right? Mm-hmm. Then no one knows what they should continue doing, but they should keep doing that they're doing well now, right? They're missing out on this opportunity because if I know what success looks like in my role and you say, keep doing these five things, they're really great. Then I have this area, right? This or path forward.
Right.
Continuing on. And then I know I have these three things over here to the side. I do need to improve, right? But at least I know where I am and I have a plan.
That's right. And I've got more specific than just, hey, great job.
Right.
You know, because that's not particularly helpful. Like people appreciate that, but general praise is not particularly helpful. People think it is, but it's not. I think it's all about specificity here, because then people, another good thing happens too. You know, you think about how you came to be aware of your particular strengths in a work environment. How did you detect those? How did you arrive at those? How did you become aware of it? And I'll bet you, if you trace those back, you will discover either a teacher or a leader, a boss, a peer who said, dang, you're good at that. That was how you handled that customer on that call. That was awesome. Here's what I saw you do. And then it sort of reveals to you what you're good at. And it helps channel your energy into those areas where you have talent and you have ability. And I think that's a huge service you do to individuals, especially in a leader role, when you can help shine a spotlight on people's strengths so they can grow into those more and find more where that came from.
Yeah. And the other thing I've experienced and also seen happen is when someone, leader or manager, assigns someone a project because they know they'll be so good at it, right? And then through that person learns a lot about themselves in a positive way, right?
That's right.
I'm really good at this. Well, I'm really good at that. I had no idea. And I can, you know, now they have this expanded repertoire.
Exactly. And that's really how people connect with that. And then I think another really important dimension to this when it comes to doing recognition and appreciation right in an organization is clearly, as I've described, be specific. Talk about what it is that you saw, that you loved, and be open and public about that, then it signals it. But the other is to connect it up to what is valued in the organization. Create that linkage back to what really matters. I'll give you another example. As we've worked with the company Virgin Trains, they're in the UK. They've got a great sort of more premium train service where they're really trying to differentiate themselves from other forms of transportation. And as you would expect with any sort of Virgin company, you've got Richard Branson sort of energy and vitality kind of infused in it. There's an expectation that it better be different. And they have these core brand ingredients like shaking things up, giving a damn, fun, innovation, boldness, wow factor. These are things that are prized culturally and ultimately prized experiences they're trying to deliver to customers, and to do things to create experiences that their competitors won't create. Well, how do you actually bring that about? How do you help every employee understand what that looks like and not just have it be a value that's stuck up on a wall somewhere, but that it's actually lived and integrated into how people interact with customers? And one of the things, as we worked with them and as I saw them do really well, is that at the end of every shift, the beginning of each new shift, they point out, hey, here's what I saw you do in having fun with that customer on the last shift. And then they point out how they did that, and they recognize really, and their recognition is aligned to the things that really matter to the customer experience that they're trying to create, and thence the employee experience. So they're really doing, I think, a masterful job at creating linkage between employee experience and customer experience. And the junction of those are really the heart of the experiences they're creating, aligned to the values and the brand values that matter most. So to me, that's also real best practice when it comes to thinking about recognition. It's not just, again, saying thank you or a pat on the back, as important as that is. If you can connect it to some of these other bigger areas, then you're modeling the very culture that you're trying to grow into as an organization. And that's powerful.
It is really powerful. And it brings, thank you for that, because you just gave appreciation. And I mean, you made it almost indispensable the way you described it. Like, it has to happen, right? In order for an organization to be successful. Yeah. Tying it in with the values and how it brings the entire organization to life. So our time has flown. Wow. And we just have a minute or two left. David, if you're open to it, I'd love to have you share, you know, just if you had like one recommendation to give to listeners, you know, in this area of these talent magnets, thinking about having a great culture, if someone's thinking about what's a place to start, what would you recommend?
Yeah, great question. I think a couple of thoughts. One is, choose to be intentional about it. Don't let it just default into whatever state of being is already there. I think that intentionality, and as I meet with more forward-thinking leaders, there is clearly an intentionality about their work, about saying, let's shape a culture strategy. And then I think that usually begins with do some sort of assessment. Find out where you are. You know, we had to, in order for all of this research to come about, we ended up creating an instrument that you can actually use, a survey instrument to test how are you doing against these six talent magnet areas. And that becomes a pretty nice baseline to go, oh, we're really strong in this area. Huh, it kind of confirms we're weaker in this area. And then you can begin to think about and organize and choreograph, if you will, some of your various culture initiatives. Every company has different initiatives, but what I've seen is most of them are fairly one-off and they're fairly disconnected from one another. And I think by using a framework, you can organize your efforts and aim your energies around the areas that are most needed.
That's great, David. That is so great. And I want to thank you so much for that. You know, and being intentional, really diagnosing what's going on and understanding, you know, the deeper system. So, David, thanks so much for being on the show today and sharing such amazing information. I mean, this was a great show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to thank all of the listeners for tuning into Cultural Brilliance Radio. As always, we had an amazing time. Please join us the second and fourth Fridays of each month. Have a great couple of weeks, and we'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture